Forum to conduct business, Representatives Scott, Anderson, Wilson, Coghill, myself, McGuire. And we have three items on the agenda today. The first up is House Bill 482. Then we go to Senate Bill, well, actually, House Bill 434, then Senate Bill 261. So, without further ado, House Bill 482. Representative Anderson's down. Motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll have Crystal present it. Should be quick.
Quicker the better, Crystal.
Well, but let her read her thing. There's some important.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Judiciary Committee. For the record, my name is Crystal Novotny, staff to Representative Anderson. House Bill 482 addresses a growing problem in our schools that is often overlooked by teachers and administrators. Bullying has a truly negative effect on the social environment of schools and on the emotional and mental well-being of our children, the students in these schools. Recent studies suggest that bullying creates a climate of fear among students, inhibits their ability to learn, and leads to other antisocial behavior, such as vandalism, shoplifting, skipping and dropping out of school, fighting, and the use of drugs and alcohol. 60% of the males studied who were bullies in grades 6 through 9 were convicted of at least one crime as an adult. 35 to 40% of these former bullies had three or more convictions by the age of 24. Only 15 of the 53 school districts in Alaska have made an attempt to address the bullying issue. With the increase in students in Alaska today, there is a growing need to ensure the safety of our children's learning environment. House Bill 482 requires school districts, city and borough offices of education, law enforcement agencies, and youth serving agencies to develop and implement interagency strategies on bullying and harassment. Currently, 21 states have some sort of anti-bullying law, and another 24 states are in the process of adopting similar legislation. You'll note in your packets endorsement letters by the National Education Association, NEA, Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, and Alan Moradi, who is Department Chair of the University of Alaska Fairbanks School of Education. Bullying is a problem everywhere, not even in Alaska. Its causes and effects cannot be overlooked. This bill gives not only teachers and administration officials the tools to deal with such a growing issue, but also allows for input from parents, guardians, students, and concerned members of the community in the development of a comprehensive bullying policy. Successful programs to recognize, prevent, and effectively intervene in bullying behavior have improved safety and create a more inclusive learning environment. Some of the possible programs may include in-service training programs and other activities to improve school attendance and reduce school crime and violence. House Bill 482 is targeted to reduce vandalism, drug and alcohol abuse, gang membership, gang violence, hate crimes, bullying, teen relationship violence, and discrimination, and all harassment, including sexual harassment, in grades K through 12. The Special Committee on Education revised the bill, eliminating the mandate that school districts have an actual bullying policy. The HESS committee yesterday amended the bill back to the original form so that school districts must implement a policy and added sexual orientation as an additional form of bullying. Ultimately, House Bill 482 will protect our children, discipline unruly students, and instill in our schools a message of civility and respect or suffer the consequences. Based on the HESS revision, there is a zero fiscal note. Representative Anderson urges your support of this important legislation and thanks members McGuire, Cott, and Grunberg for their co-sponsorship. And with that, I'm available for questioning.
Thank you, Crystal. Good job. Okay, questions for the bill's sponsor? Okay, hearing none, can you stay put? Mm-hmm. These questions arise. I mean, in the audience. I think there's two people here. Bill Bjork. Nope. Okay. Bruce Johnson?
I'm here, but I don't necessarily need to testify.
Okay. Anybody online that wishes to testify? There is somebody?
Good afternoon, Anchorage, Chair McGuire.
Yes?
This is Bill Bjork in Anchorage.
Hi, Bill. Do you wish to testify?
I would ever so briefly, Chair
okay.
McGuire. Thank you, Chair McGuire, and distinguished members of the House Judiciary Committee, and thank you for hearing the committee substitute for House Bill 482. We have previously submitted a letter of support and testimony at the House Special Committee on Education. I'll not reprise that testimony. I just wanted to say to you good people hearing this bill that every school in Alaska ought to be a sanctuary where all students can learn, teachers can teach, and all school employees and the general public can work without the fear of intimidation or harassment. Many schools in Alaska are already engaged in good efforts to address these issues. Representative Anderson's proposed legislation guarantees that every school will take the steps necessary to provide a good school climate for learning that is safe for everyone. Thank you for your consideration, and thank you to sponsors Anderson, Cott, McGuire, and Grunberg. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Bill. Okay, anybody else online? Anybody else here in the audience I've overlooked? Okay, hearing none, public testimony is closed. On House Bill number 482, that brings the bill back before us for committee discussion or amendments or motions.
Madam Chairman, on,
Representative
on page 2, I'm just wondering if we should be clear on line 18 that we want the report sent to the appropriate committees in the Alaska House of Representatives and the Alaska Senate.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I'd support that amendment, conceptual amendment.
Okay, amendment number 1. Is there an objection to it? Okay, hearing none, amendment number 1 carries. Further amendments? Representative Guerra?
No, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Mr. Bjork, are you still there?
Yes, I am, sir.
Thanks. I think this is a real important bill, and I'm thrilled Representative Anderson is pushing it. It's really the only way I think we're going to get a bullying bill through the legislature. I just hope your organization will also sort of give credit to Representative Salmon, whose bill, I'm not sure where it is right now, but it, just the way the legislature works, it seems like his bill isn't going to go anywhere. But I'm hoping you'll also, as you talk to your membership about these bills, also give Representative Salmon some credit. But I think it's real important this one gets pushed because this is the only one that's going to, the way the legislature works, have legs. So I'll do anything to help Representative Anderson get this one through, too.
Through the chair, Representative Garrett, pardon me. Representative Garrett?
Yeah.
You make a very good point. We have followed the committee substitute for House Bill 233, Representative Salmon's bill, sponsored by distinguished representatives Sidna Wilson, Newman, and Kurtula, and it is a good bill. There are many good ideas in that bill, and we will certainly track that, sir.
Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Representative Anderson.
Just to delineate, actually, Crystal, my staff knew about that bill. I wasn't aware that there was another bill. But you know, some folks from Anchorage recommended I pass the bill. I commend Chair McGuire because you had some legislation in your first term with the foundation of this. And secondly, I think there are differences enough where otherwise my bill wouldn't be moving. That would be the vehicle. So that's why I don't think there's anything, not that you suggested that, but that we manipulated the process. I think it's a different bill, hence the movement of this. But it's the same idea and concept. And that is, it is appreciated that Representative Salmon targeted that.
I'm glad to see the bill, too. The bill that I did my freshman year put violence and dispute resolution policies as a requirement. We couldn't quite get at this at that time, but Representative Garrett?
Thanks, Madam Chair. It's, we sort of speak in code in the legislature in a way we don't want to address certain subjects. I actually am, I'm 100% supportive of the fact that Representative Anderson is doing this. I think it's great, and I hope I didn't suggest anything other than that. That's it.
For the record, I love you, Les.
Your motion? Representative Cott.
I would just note before we move it out that Representative, the main sponsor of the bill
was a bully. Younger life, and he's not one of those 40% that were convicted of a crime later on. I'm certain that he will use his bullying abilities to move the bill through the system. So with that, Madam Chairman, I would move Committee of Substitute for House Bill 482 as amended, out of committee with individual recommendations and probably a zero fiscal.
It is zero fiscal.
Okay, is there an objection? Hearing none, 482 is moved. Thank you, Crystal.
Jeez,
good job.
Crystal.
Wow. Okay, let's try to keep our pace. Next, we're going to take up the transportation bills. Do you want to take them up at the same time? Is that the goal, or do you have one? Okay, House Bill 434 first. Let's do the House Bill first.
Thank you very much.
Hey, welcome to House Judiciary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Actually, this is my first time in House Judiciary.
Welcome.
First time we've had a transportation bill here, actually.
Did it on a good day. I'll leave it at that.
I hope so. For the record, John McKinnon, Deputy Commissioner of Transportation for Highways and Public Facilities. The first bill before you, House Bill 434, also known as the NEPA Delegation Bill. Safety Lou, the Highway Reauthorization Act that passed and was signed into law last August, included a pilot program for five states, a NEPA delegation pilot program for five states, Alaska, California, Oklahoma, Ohio, and Texas, that gives these five states the ability to apply for a delegation to the Secretary of Transportation for NEPA responsibilities. NEPA is the National Environmental Policy Act. Environmental impact statements are required under NEPA, environmental assessments and that. It gave these five states the opportunity to participate in a pilot program where the state assumes the NEPA decision-making responsibility that is presently in the hands of, for highway programs, the Federal Highway Administration. It sounds like, and on one hand, you could say that, boy, we'll be able to run rampant and do what we want to. What this does is it puts the responsibility onto the department to determine what level of documentation is required, whether it's an environmental impact statement, an environmental assessment, or the more simple version, a categorical exclusion. Those are the three levels of environmental documentation. For your information, 95% of what we do are categorical exclusions. Repaving a road is a Cat X. That's the jargon for it. You fill out a lot of forms and they say, yeah, we agree, this doesn't really have any controversy, you're repaving a road, not a big deal. You do something a little more significant than that and you affect a neighborhood with some right-of-way acquisition and they say, you know, there might be some impact here, I think you want to investigate a little bit further, do an environmental assessment. And then when you go the next step of going right through a neighborhood or doing something more significant on the animal side of things, impacts to wetlands and that, then it might trigger an environmental impact statement. Very few EISs are done. We might do one or two a year in the department on highway projects, maybe a half a dozen environmental assessments, but by far the large number are categorical exclusions. But up to this point, the state doesn't determine what level of documentation is required. It's the Federal Highway Administration. Every state in the union would like to have the opportunity to participate in this program, but only five states were selected. Great. And I think we can thank Chairman Young for that one.
Yep.
It's a good opportunity. It doesn't result in any less environmental protection. They're all the laws and rules and regulation taking care of the animals and the wetlands out there that we're still being able to comply with. It just puts the decision-making process in the hands of the state
Right. Instead
of the hands of the federal government.
Okay, and so I think the reason it was referred here is Section 1, which pertains to the Attorney General's power, that would be changed to allow him or her to waive the state's immunity from suit in federal court, provided under the 11th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States.
That's correct, and if you have any technical questions of a legal nature, I don't think I could competently answer those questions with the attorneys that you have in this committee. So Peter Putzier from the Department of Law is here to address any of those questions you might have.
Great.
Maybe he can come up so I can ask a question.
Peter, take a seat. Welcome to House Judiciary again.
Yeah. My name is Peter Putz here. I'm with the Department of Law. I represent Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Hey, questions? And just so that other folks know, we also have Lieutenant Helgo from the State Troopers. I think that's probably more for the next bill with the traffic safety corridors. But we also have Kurt Smith. Okay. And are you also just here as a resource?
Yes.
Fabulous. So those are the resources to the committee. Representative Guerra, then Gruenberg.
Peter, I've got, I guess I'm not sold yet. I need to figure out how much this is going to cost the state before we decide to take over a job the feds are doing for us for free. And one is, there's two state costs that I can see. One of them relates to you. I think one of them relates to Mr. McKinnon's department. The one that relates to you is under NEPA, when a community or environmental or other group decides to challenge the way the federal government, or if we do this, the state did the NEPA process, the way they did the environmental assessments, if they decide to challenge it, under this bill, the state would have to defend the lawsuit. The state will have to defend its actions. The state will have to hire its own expert witnesses. So I have two questions for you. Do you have an assessment of what a typical case would cost the state to defend in terms of hiring expert witnesses and providing the legal personnel? And two, can you let me know maybe what percentage of the major highway projects there's litigation under NEPA? Is it 50% of them, 100% of them, 10% of them? I guess we need to know these costs and the cost possibilities before we vote to take over this liability.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra. First, it's unlikely that there's going to be a lot of litigation simply because most of the projects that we work on have 6 to 8 year lead times. This is a 6 year pilot program, so it's unlikely that there's going to be a floodgate of litigation that occurs simply because of the fact that probably there's not going to be that many projects that are going to go through the entire environmental process and result in an EIS. The number of times, and perhaps we've got someone here who can put statistics on it, John McKinnon had alluded to, we don't usually get to the EIS process that often. So it's unlikely that we're going to be in court a significant amount of time battling over EISs. In terms of the statistics, that is, states that or the federal government issuing an EIS and then get challenged on it, I don't know what the answer to that is. I don't know if it's 25% or 100% of the time that groups challenge the EIS. I don't have statistics on that.
I can add a little bit to that. NEPA passed in, I believe, 1968 or 69, and since then we've been challenged on two projects. Your tunnel, that was an EIS, went all the way to the Ninth Circuit and the state / the federal highways prevailed on that one, and the Iliamna non-Dalton Bridge project. That was an environmental assessment. Other issues associated with that one, Pebble Mine and other things that have complicated that. But we have prevailed on that one so far.
I appreciate that. I don't think I have any inside information. The third one's going to be the Kinnick Arm Bridge, so I think you probably know that. And I guess that goes to you, Mr. Putz, here. The Kinnick Arm Bridge, I mean, the Toll Authority was just adopted in 2004, started its work in around 2004, but there's already an EIS process. It's not finished, but at first, in the EIS process, they decide what scope they're going to consider on the project, and they're in that scoping process now, and people are already talking about suing, so they're not going to wait for the whole project to go ahead, that full 6 to 8 year period. There's probably going to be a lawsuit earlier, so I don't know that I'm all that calmed by the fact that we're only going to have this authority for 6 years. It seems like the lawsuit potential is earlier rather than later in it. So on this one, it doesn't sound like it happens very often, but would we be therefore defending the lawsuit then that comes out on the Kinnick Arm Bridge if that one comes out?
President Guerra, through the chair. That project was started under the guidelines or under the control of the federal administration, and they would continue to defend that one when that does happen. Any that the state ops to from the point that this we get the delegation and actually get our application accepted by the Federal Highway Administration or the Secretary of Transportation. Any that we take over from then on would be up to us to defend. Okay. Procedural law.
Hey, Representative Dornbrook.
Thank you. I guess I'm going to ask Mr. McKinnon the first question. I see on the chart that we've been assessed penalties. Why? The chart is labeled United States Department of Transportation, Federal Highway Administration, Table 4, Part 1, Page 1 of 2.
It's for the next bill mix. That's okay. It's all attached.
Oh.
Okay. Okay, so.
Well, wait a second. Just.
Okay.
I'll move the bill, Madam Chair, when he's done.
I got a question while maybe next.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. McKinnon, this program was promulgated by Congress last year, so we're in the second year.
Representative Cott, the law went into effect August 10th of 2005, and it's a six-year pilot program, so it sunsets October 10th or August 10th of 2011. We're halfway through the first year.
Madam Chair, I'm just wondering whether or not a sunset clause ought to be added to the bill.
Yeah, that was my question, too.
Representative Cott, through the chair, I guess that would be your prerogative. I think the federal legislation sunsets it. If the pilot program terminates in 2011, then it would effectively terminate the state's participation.
Through the chair, Representative Cotty, the federal legislation has sunset provisions in it, so it expires of its own accord after 6 years under 23 USC. I don't have the 327.
And the reason for the questioning, Madam Chair, is I can't recall without a sunset clause, this statute may end up on the books for quite some time with the clause. I believe the reviser then automatically just removes that in the reviser's review of the statutes. That's the only issue I have out there.
That was my question, too. If I may.
Representative,
if it's a six-year pilot program and we are saddled with a lot of defensive lawsuits and the thing ends after that period of time, should this have a sunset clause on it?
Peter?
Chair Representative Greenberg, we can look into that.
Okay. Where does it go next? Finance? Okay. Representative Coghill.
It's on a finance issue as well. I mean, I think we're going to talk about a six-year program. We're talking about five positions that are fairly well-funded that aren't going to go away probably in 6 years. So. I know we are looking at probably the Attorney General part, but.
Point. Okay. Yes. Let me.
Yeah, I might add, in looking at the fiscal note, 647,000, five positions, one of which would be an RSA to the Attorney General's office. These are CIP supported. Federal funds, project funds for the projects, pay for these positions like they do most of the design and construction positions in the department. So they are participating. Positions. We look at this as an opportunity to speed up many of these environmental documents by getting the decisions closer to home. And when a document is sitting on a desk in the Federal Highway Administration or some other federal agency, we have a difficult time when we pick up the phone and try and speed it up, get it off that desk, and either approved or disapproved or getting some action on it, because they're a different agency. But when those decisions are sitting in the department, isolated in the department through a firewall, but still in the department, it's much easier to affect their movement through the department. And we see the opportunity here of moving them through faster as a way of actually more than paying for the $650,000 cost of the program. 1 year delay of a project can cost millions of dollars of that project just in inflation alone.
Representative Coghill and then Gruenberg.
I'll accept that as a partial explanation. We need to, getting back to the immunity question, tell me what the requirements would be under waiving the immunity from suit in federal court. What would be the anticipation of that? Is that a federal requirement that's coming with this particular thing, or how does this actually practically play out?
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, that was one of the requirements of the program, that this had to occur. And I think the idea was NEPA, of course, is a federal, governed by federal statutes and enforced in the federal courts, and we're essentially stepping into the shoes of the FHWA and defending these actions. So that was one of the requirements of Safety Loop placed, is that we have this provision in here.
Sheriff, I just continue. Yeah. So, but does the immunity only skip over the state and land, then the responsibility lands on the feds? Is that what happens?
Chair, Representative Coghill, if the state were not to prevail, and then if the position that the state took in the action were found not to be substantially justified, if both of those requirements were met, then the state might get saddled with paying some attorney's fees, for example, to the other side.
Okay, Representative Gruenberg, and then Cott.
With respect to the Section 1 of the bill, by the way, that chart I've given you, gentlemen, that does not belong with this bill, huh?
I'm going to check with my highway safety engineer. I think this has to do with safety sanctions that are penalties assessed against us, but I believe it's
okay.
The next
why don't you give it to him and he can take a look at it? My question is, how much money are we getting as a result of participating in the pilot program? How much is it worth to Alaska?
With the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I don't believe this is worth any additional money. Reauthorization is over the five-year life of the program, including the earmarks above the line, is approximately $2.5 billion. That's more than the state has received ever for highway.
It's an authorization.
It's part of the highway bill authorization, and it allows us to use a portion of those funds to pay for the NEPA pilot program. They weren't specified, but when one of the environmental NEPA experts in the department will be working on a project, they will bill out to that particular project. Like when the AG's office is working on the legal sufficiency of a NEPA document as part of a project, they bill specifically to that project, and those project pre-construction funds pay.
So it allows you to access the funds?
Correct.
Okay. And I gather that this is involving safety, so it really involves the other bill? Is that what I should? Okay, I'll put it aside. Now, I do have a question about the AG and the waiver of sovereign immunity. As I understand it, we have to waive, this is a waiver that's above and beyond the waivers in existing state statutes. Is that right, Mr. Putzier?
Representative Gruenberg, that's correct. I mean, it's required by Safety Lou that this waiver be specifically put into the statute.
I understand that. My question is, under Alaska law, does this waive any sovereign immunity that is not already waived? What does it tell me specifically what additional it does to ASO 950250 in those statutes?
I believe it would be, and it would subject us to the procedural rules in federal court. For example, we might be subject to, it's not clear what a federal court would do, but we might be subject to the Equal Access for Justice Act, which might apply, for example, different attorneys' fees provisions. By way of example, we would be standing basically in the shoes of the FHWA.
What does the Equal Access for Justice Act require in this case? Because I don't know what it is. And I suspect there may be another member of the committee, or six, who don't.
Well, it's codified at 28 U.S.C. 2412, and in environmental litigation, what it means as a practical matter. Again, it's the state would have to not prevail in its position, and then the state's position would have to be found not to be substantially justified. And then, if those two standards are met, then the state would have to end up paying attorney's fees. It's, private, so it's an attorney's fees provision. It's
it would allow a prevailing party, if the state took a almost a frivolous position, to get attorney's fees. I mean, to pay attorney's fees.
That's correct.
Okay. The use of the term may, I mean, I support that. I think that's a good idea. The use of the term may on line 7, is that the language that's specifically mandated by the federal law? Why can't we just say, start that sentence, in cases that involve blah, 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 the state hereby waives its immunity? Why are we giving that discretion to an attorney general?
The Chair, Representative Grunberg, I think the reason it was drafted this way was because there was a concern about potential separation of powers issue, that is, the legislature mandating that the attorney general waive sovereign immunity, and so this was put in here as a may instead of a shall. The federal language says shall, and before we could adopt these authorities, the attorney general would have to, presumably in the form of the MOU, all these programs require a separate MOU be entered into with the FHWA for assumption of the NEPA responsibilities. And there would have to be a separate certification in there, either on a project-by-project basis or for all projects. We don't know the exact details of that because we're still trying to figure out the nuts and bolts of how this is going to be implemented. So all this legislation does, in broad terms, is get our foot in the door to be able to assume these responsibilities. It's not itself an assumption of any responsibilities, and it's not itself a waiver of any of our normal sovereign immunity protections. It does enable the Attorney General, on a case-by-case or for several projects, to waive sovereign immunity.
I may follow up, Madam Chair. Two questions. My recollection of the wording of the current sovereign immunity waiver statutes is not like this. It is a legislative waiver. And if we're talking about a separation of powers, I'd flip that one back on you. And under this state, the legislature, not the Attorney General, waives sovereign immunity in all the statutes I know. Can you cite me another one that's written like this?
Through the Chair, Representative Grunberg, I can't today, no.
I don't think any of them are written like this. And my second question, Madam Chair, that's the first one under state law. But from what you're saying, if the federal law says shall and this one says may, does this even meet the requirements of the federal law, Mr. Putzer?
Through the Chair, Representative Grunberg, we vetted this through FHWA extensively, and this was okay with them so long as there was a sufficient follow-up. And again, all of these programs, the 325, 326, 327, the legislation doesn't implement anything. It allows for implementation. It gives DOT the authority to proceed with this program.
I understand that. That gives DOT the authority. But my concern is once DOT exercises the authority, I don't really want to see the Attorney General not be able to refuse to waive sovereign immunity. I think if somebody is injured by the actions of the state, they should have access to federal court. And I'm wondering, I think I may offer an amendment to change this to the language I was suggesting earlier, which clearly meets the requirements of federal law, is more consistent with existing state law. Would you have made your heartburn if I did that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Grunberg, I have to see what your amendment is.
You will.
Representative Cott and then Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. John, looking over the list of other states that are participants, trying to figure out how Alaska got associated with those, what were the requirements for entry into the program, or how did Alaska get identified as being one of those participants in the pilot program? And secondly, do you know if the other four states, California, Oklahoma, Ohio, and Texas, have fully fulfilled their commitment for entry?
Through the Chair, Representative Cott, you know, in looking at those list of states, I believe every one of those states has a ranking member on the House Transportation Committee. I think that's...
It's closed.
Yeah. And we are in regular contact with them. In fact, in the audience, Bill Ballard is here. He's the state environmental coordinator for all three regions at headquarters. He is the working member on a for the state with those four other states, looking at what the federal government is proposing as far as their rules and seeing how that fits in and commenting on the rules. So we are working actively with the four other states as a group. We're all in this together. We're not, no one state is going out on their own. But these five states, all five states, were very interested in getting this delegation and working together to achieve it. And I believe they all have legislation in the works giving them the authority to do it.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I remember right, when you first started talking about this, you said that this was one of the requirements of the federal government to be in the pilot program. So if we change this, that probably would knock us out of the pilot program, right?
The may or shall, Representative?
No, the what you said.
Rundberg.
Yeah.
The waiver of sovereign immunity?
Yeah.
That is a requirement that
That's what I thought you said.
Yeah. For us to be in agreement, you know, we enter into an MOA or an MOU, I don't know which it's going to be called this time, with Federal Highway Administration, the Secretary of Transportation, and in that we waive sovereign immunity for suits brought under this. It's just the language in the bill. Once the Attorney General's office, the bill drafters got it, they preferred the may language as opposed to the shall. But we will not get approval from Federal Highway Administration or the Secretary of Transportation unless we are, unless it's a shall on the MOA.
Representative Guerra.
Two questions. One on the sovereign immunity issue. I have this recollection when I've had cases with the state and when I've worked with the state in the past, that one of the reasons the state never wants to be drug into federal court and waive its sovereign immunity in one case is they fear by doing it in one case, they've now waived it for other cases as well. So I'd like your candid assessment of whether, so am I right in recollecting that that's the argument, that you don't want sovereign immunity waived in any one case because then it gets interpreted as a sovereign immunity waiver in others too, and you then get drug into federal court in the future? Is that something the Attorney General has taken a position on in the past, and is that a concern?
Through the Chair, Representative Guerra, I'm not sure if the Alaska Attorney General has taken a position on that. It's probably a valid general concern. This is very narrowly targeted to a NEPA program, which is a procedural requirement where you do a notice of intent, you have a scoping, you have a preliminary EIS, you have a final EIS, and then you have a record of decision, and then it might get challenged. So it's not... it's limited to a very sort of narrow field, and I think that any waiver could certainly be and would be before that we would accept this provision. We would only accept being in federal court for that, for purpose of that specific program, and because the federal government required us to do that in order to participate. So I don't perceive that there would be any long-term negative consequences of what I will call a limited waiver of sovereign immunity.
I'm not going to hold this bill here for a more complete answer on that, but I would like a statement from the Attorney General's office that they don't contend that waivers of sovereign immunity on limited issues are things that might result in a sovereign immunity waiver on other issues beyond the one you waived it in. I mean, I have a recollection. It could be wrong, but I have this recollection that that's always the argument the state makes. We can't do it here because it'll happen in other cases then. Once we open the floodgates, so I would like a memo for the Attorney General's office saying that's not a concern, or if it is, I'd like a memo explaining that it is, rather than holding you here and waiting for somebody else to come in and testify to that. Is that, would you be able to do that?
Through the Chair, Representative Guerra, yes.
Madam Chair.
Representative Klocken.
I think the sub G says specifically under this article. 42,300. So I think they'd have a hard time looking beyond that. But just for what it's worth, the actual grant here is very specific, and that was kind of one of the first concerns I had, that couldn't leak out of that. So if it could leak beyond that, I would like to know. But it seemed very specific to me.
Sure.
Representative Gruenberg.
We're distributing the mystery amendment, and. What the language will be, Madam Chair, Mr. Putzer. Do we have an extra copy for the gentleman in the hot seat there? The language will read, in cases that involve compliance, discharge, or enforcement of responsibilities assumed by the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities under AS 4442-300, comma, the state's immunity from suit in federal court provided under the 11th Amendment, the Constitution of the United States, is waived. That'll be the amendment. But my question is, do we also need to reference the sovereign immunity clause in the state's constitution, since we are referencing the one in the federal constitution? So, Mr. Putzer, my first question to you through the chair is, assuming we take a look at this amendment, should we also reference the clause in the state constitution just to cover all bases?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, if I recollect, and I don't have that the state constitution provision with me, but that addressed certain other issues, such as when and under what circumstances a state would waive its sovereign immunity, contract, personal injury.
No. I'm limiting it to solely claims under this paragraph. I would say under the 11th Amendment, blah, 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 and under Article blank, Section blank of the state constitution. Do you think that would be at all necessary? Should we put that in here? I would tend not to do it unless you think it would be helpful. I'd look at you, too. You're going to defer. Good.
I would like to read that clause before.
Would you like us to get a copy of the state constitution for you? Yeah. I think what it says, here you go. I think what it says is the legislature may provide for the waiver of sovereign immunity, basically. I think it's a just general grant, as I recall.
We have to terminate just prior to 3 p.m. to start the session, so if anybody's interested in passing this bill or the bill after it, we probably need to get moving. It's up to you.
I'm interested in moving this.
Representative Grunberg?
Make the motion.
Do you want to move the bill or move the amendment?
I just got one other question that's important.
Okay. While he's looking that up.
And just so I understand this whole thing on how much this is going to cost the state or not cost the state, just tell me if my understanding is right. We are able to access federal highway funds to pay for this, but these are funds that if we didn't use for this, we'd be able to use for something else. Is that correct?
Representative Guerra, that's correct. And just to clarify this a little bit, 9% of these funds are state funds. That's the state match for the federal funds. So
9% of the 637 is state money. The rest is federal money that if we didn't use for this, we could use for some other highway project?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you very much. The rest I'll speak to you in the hallway. I'll state this concern and I'll elaborate later, but it seems to me that if we have this backlog of highway projects, it's really not such a big deal that some of these projects might wait through the NEPA process, because we have more projects than we can fund right now anyway, and I don't think the wait is going to slow down the actual breaking of ground on some of these projects.
I'm
questioning why we would spend the money to do this.
Do you know where it is in the state constitution?
Fair enough.
Madam Chair, I'm going to make a motion here.
Representative Grunberg.
I'm going to move the amendment and then an amendment to the amendment.
Okay.
So, first of all,
do you want to just move it as amended?
Well.
Or do you think the amendment will be controversial?
I don't think so. Okay. No more than the amendment. I don't. Hopefully it won't be. Let's call this conceptual amendment one. That's okay? Okay. And if somebody would object for the purpose of discussion.
I object.
Thank you. I'm going to
not
move.
Not just for the purpose of discussion.
I'll vehemently
he
object.
He just objects in general. Okay.
Okay, I would like conceptually, after the term 11th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, have an amendment in there that will also add the reference to the relevant provision in the state constitution, too. And I'd ask that to be considered amendment number 1-2 of the amendment.
Okay. Is there an objection? So are you offering the amendment as amended?
Yeah.
That's probably the cleaner way. Okay, so the amendment before you, as stated, amendment number one has been moved. Is there an objection? Representative Coghill.
I'm going to maintain my objection until I can see what we're amending, because I just don't want to do that. I mean, I agree with our Constitution. I just want to make sure. I may not agree with the bill once we do it that way. So, I just haven't had a chance to go down that road. First thing I see is suits against the state and the legislature. I haven't gotten to a sovereign immunity section yet. And nervous about waiving sovereign immunity anyway.
Does anybody know what article that's
in?
Let's now officially take a brief at ease. After, Representative Gruenberg assures me he's ready.
I'm sorry?
You've assured me you're ready.
Yes, I am ready. Okay, I'd like you to, on your handwritten amendment, it says page 1, line 11, insert after, and that should be, quote, states, the following language. This is, I am amending my own amendment here.
Okay.
Quote, and under Article 2, Section 21 of the Alaska Constitution is waived. Unquote.
So this will be amendment number 2?
No, this is all amendment number 1.
Okay, you've already offered amendment number 1.
I'd like to offer.
And there was an objection to it. And so I guess the easier way would be to
withdraw
the objection, and why don't you withdraw your motion, and then why don't you restate it?
Okay, this is now amendment number 2.
Okay, so is the objection withdrawn?
Yes, I withdraw my objection.
Let's recoil backward. Okay, objection's withdrawn. Is the amendment withdrawn?
Yes.
Okay, amendment's withdrawn. So now you want to offer amendment, what will be amendment number 2?
It's the same. If you would just relabel this
okay.
well-drafted amendment, very clear, amendment number 2. And then on, it's just the way you have it, folks, except on the last part where it says page 1, line 11, insert after, quote, states, unquote. It will read, quote, and under Article 2, Section 21 of the Alaska Constitution is waived, period, close quote. No, that's fine, Mr. Shine.
Object.
Okay, there's an objection.
I don't want to waive our
Speaking
Constitution.
To your objection, Representative Coghill.
Madam Chair, I don't want to waive our Constitution. We might have immunity statutes that might could possibly be waived, but I am not going to waive our Constitution. I'm sorry. If I understand correctly, I have to sit down and read this language, but it looks like we're waiving it without regard to the AS 4442-300.
No, that is certainly not, Madam Chair. That is not my intent.
It appears to me, so
no.
Set me straight.
No, this is very clear. The waiver is only for those provisions on lines 7 through 10 of page 1. And if there's any case, I want it crystal clear that the drafter can make that 110% clear. I'm waiving it for nothing else.
All right, I see. We call it under the U.S. and state constitution.
Yes.
All right, I'll remove my objection on that.
Okay, thank you for pointing that out.
The objection is removed, and so we have amendment number 2 before us. Is there further discussion or objection to amendment number 2? Okay, hearing none, amendment number 2 carries. Further amendments to House Bill number 454, Representative Cox.
And Madam Chair, just as a subsequent note to that amendment, I want to work with John to make sure we're okay with this as we move forward, but there'll also have to be a conforming title amendment. I'll bring that out.
It's true. Fortunately, we're still on the House side.
You looking at me?
Yeah. Representative Cott just said he thinks we need a title amendment.
Oh, sure.
So do you want to move amendment number 3 will be a conforming title amendment? Do you want to do it conceptually?
That should be sufficient.
Yes.
Okay, and so that's moved by Representative Cott. Is there an objection to that? Okay, hearing none, amendment number 3 carries. Further amendments to House Bill 454.
Did you want a sunset?
Madam Chair, I'm not prepared to offer a sunset amendment at this point. I think if you just would bring that up in the next committee, I'll talk to the chair and see if there's any rhyme or reason for sunsetting it. I want to check with the revisor to make clear that if we put a sunset on there, then it automatically is removed from the books, unless we authorize it otherwise.
So with that, is there a motion to move the bill out, Representative Wilson?
I move House Bill number 434, Version A, with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
As amended.
As amended.
Okay, is there an objection? Okay, hearing no objection, 434 as amended has moved. Representative Gruenberg.
I apologize for being late. I was discombobulated, but I would like to introduce my newest staff member to the committee,
okay.
Ann Pesko. That's P-E-S-K-O-E. She's a very fine attorney from San Francisco and has as a distant relative by marriage to me. She has assisted the state of Bosnia in writing their commercial code, and so we're lucky to have her. She'll be here till the end of the regular session.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome, Ann. Okay, so now we have Senate Bill number 261 before us. Tell us about that. This is where your chart comes in, Representative Gruenberg.
Oh, this is where we're going to
Boy, we've got some visual aids.
Visual aids. Pretty pictures.
Doubles the fines and traffic safety corridors.
Right.
Any questions?
Got to pay for these charts somehow.
And just so folks are mindful, we're at 2:30 now. We have to be back on the floor at 3. So, however you want to take that.
I will be brief and to the point, Madam Chairman. And again, for the record, John McKinnon, Deputy Commissioner of Transportation for Highways and Facilities. The bill before you, Senate Bill 261, is the one that gives the department the ability to establish highway safety corridors and collect double traffic fines or assess double traffic fines within those highway safety corridors. A highway safety corridor will be defined as a piece of road, usually longer than 3 or 4 miles, but a stretch of road with a definite beginning and an end that has a significantly higher than statewide average fatality rates on it. The one that is illustrated right here is the Seward Highway from Potter Marsh to Girdwood, and on that it shows you from the period of 1977 to 2005 the fatal accident locations along that stretch of highway. Little background on this: at the beginning of January, there was a serious fatality on the Seward Highway that was caused by a driver that was driving in erratic behavior and shouldn't have been driving that way. A young person with a history of bad driving habits hit a couple on their way home to Anchor Point. The couple were killed. The young man survived the accident. We immediately got together with public safety at the urging of a number of people, as well as within the department and out of the department, and started looking at what we could do. We got together with public safety. We have these highway safety sanction funds. Those were those penalties, Representative Gruenberg, that you mentioned. They are soft sanctions of construction dollars that are pulled out of the construction side that go into education. For lack of a better term, we were able to use that money to fund additional enforcement by public safety on that stretch of road. And since then, there have been no fatalities on that, which I'm not sure if there's a cause and effect relationship there. But it's really heightened the public's awareness that that's a stretch of road that, because of the environmental conditions there, as well as driver behavior in most cases, that it's a stretch of road you need to pay particular attention to and be careful on. Interesting statistic on that stretch of road. The entire Seward Highway from Anchorage to Seward in 2005, state troopers wrote 722 citations on the entire highway from Anchorage to Seward. That's over 100 miles. The Girdwood detachment alone, from the middle of January to the end of March, a little bit less than 3 months, with the increased enforcement that we've helped provide, wrote 730 citations. Increased enforcement works. What this bill does is allows us to designate a stretch of highway as a highway safety corridor, signed legally on both ends and intermittently during the highway, during the stretch of the road. Pay for the troopers' increased enforcement on that, and every citation that's issued is assessed double fines. The additional fines return back to the Department of Transportation, which we RSA back to the troopers, or could be another law enforcement agency that pays for the increased enforcement. So once you fund this thing initially, it continues to pay for itself, and you know, somewhat tongue in cheek, I'm willing to bet it's going to be a moneymaker. You know, when I looked at 730 citations in that 3-month period, I was looking back on what my average citation was for speeding or whatever that was, and you know, I think it's probably $75 to $100 a ticket. You know, we double that, and that's a lot of money for 3 or 4 months that more than paid for the cost of increased enforcement. We've identified a number of areas within the state, mostly in central region, that would qualify for highway safety corridors. The Parks Highway from Wasilla to Big Lake is a very dangerous stretch. Kinnick Goose Bay Road is probably the number one piece of road in the state, and it's got an interesting little map there, too.
You want us to put that up?
If you'd like to see some of these other pieces.
In Coghill's neck of the woods, Fairbanks?
You know, Representative Coghill, we have not done an analysis in northern region yet. Our sense is that the traffic volumes are not high enough there to trigger it. There may be some small pieces that would do it. And we're primarily looking at and here we get into a definition of what's urban and rural. We're not looking at an urban highway where you've got intersections, a lot of intersections that trigger the accidents. We're looking at rural roads that don't have much in the way of intersections, where driver behavior happens to be the cause.
Good job.
Yeah, Kinnick Goose Bay Road. We got that map to the troopers right there, and they started looking at those little grape clusters there and looked at that and said, you know, we know where we have to target our enforcement. The little boxes there, the yellow and the blue boxes that describe the accident, the date, number of fatalities in that. The blue boxes we had done separate from the yellow boxes, those indicate drug or alcohol caused accidents, where it was proven there was drugs and alcohol causing it.
Representative Wilson, thank you. Which color?
Yeah, which color is the...
The blue means there were alcohol or drugs involved. The yellow means that there was nothing proven that there were drugs and alcohol, but there could have been.
Oh, okay.
Representative
Garrett? Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. McKinnon, just so I understand this, and I want to make this even stronger, I think. You anticipate that one of these corridors is going to be along the Seward Highway between Anchorage and Girdwood, I take it?
Representative Garrett, through the chair, yes.
Okay. And that's good. That's needed. And what we're really doing is we're raising the fine to pay for future enforcement. It's not like we're raising the fine so that people know the fine is double and therefore won't speed. We're really just raising the money for enforcement. Not the education thing wouldn't sway me. It doesn't seem like people are going to know the fine's double, so I won't do it. But I am convinced that you raise the money and you're able to hire more law enforcement. That seems to be the intent. Am I right there?
That's correct.
Okay. Then the one thing I would like to see added to this, and I hope you'll accept this as a friendly strengthening of the bill, I'd like you to think about it. The thing on especially the Seward Highway that kills more people, or that kills too many people, maybe not the most, is passing where people aren't supposed to pass, and passing into oncoming traffic. And I would like to see as part of this a substantial increase in the fine in these highway safety corridors, more than just double, for the specific act of passing on a solid yellow line. Let me know how you would feel about that, because that is not just a simple traffic violation at that point. That is something that is killing people, and we know it.
So. Representative Garrett, through the chair, I believe the fine schedule is established in regulation by DMV, and we can double those, but we could cooperate with DMV to see if they would be able to raise any of those fine skips. I believe that's where it is.
Is there any way we could find out somewhat quickly what that fine is for passing on a double yellow line?
I've never been ticketed for that, so I couldn't tell you.
Well, I want to come up with a fine amount, but I need to know what it is right now and need to know whether I'm doing anything to change things. And I guess...
You have been ticketed driving your RV and watching your video with TV on it, so how much was that one?
Is there anybody else that could be called that would be a resource that could let us know, do you think? Oh, we did have a trooper on the phone.
Lieutenant Helgo is...
Lieutenant Helgo, are you still there?
Yes, ma'am, through the chair, Lieutenant Helgo.
Do Do you think you have the resources to answer Representative Guerra's question regarding the current penalty for crossing a double yellow line?
Yes, ma'am. I have it handy.
Fabulous.
Good. So, through the chair, Representative Guerra, under 13AC02075b, currently the fine and point value for passing driving left of center in a no passing zone is $150 plus 2 points. And through the chair, members of the committee, one thing to remember is that if law enforcement gets a complaint of driving in a reckless or negligent behavior, such as passing left of center, where someone has to take evasive action, they would be charged with either reckless driving or negligent driving, which carries substantially higher penalty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up on this concept a couple more times. So under this bill right now, we would enable them to do it $300, is that the way the bill is written right now, or for that violation?
Representative Guerra, through the chair, yes, that would be a double the fine, and if the penalty, the base penalty is $150 for crossing that yellow line, it would be a $300 fine when it came out of the court. As Lieutenant Helgo said, likely if they were doing it erratically, it would be more a negligent or reckless driving charge and significantly higher.
Thank you. I'm wondering, I think you might be able to make some public education point if you really single out the passing in an illegal passing zone part of this, and I wonder if increasing the fine for that conduct, especially much higher, like tripling it or something like that, might actually leak out and send a message, and I would really like that fine to be very, very high. It's fine if we catch somebody doing that in a reckless way, in a way where they endangered somebody's life. We see them potentially driving into another car, but I want people to think when they're doing that, regardless of whether they're going to get caught for driving into another car or almost driving into another car, I want people to know that that conduct is unacceptable, especially in these zones. I'm thinking of
of an amendment.
Thank you.
Further discussion, and is there anybody else in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill, the Senate bill? Anybody else on the teleconference? Okay. So we'll close public testimony, but Lieutenant Helgo, if you could stand by. If there are any other questions, Representative Gruenberg?
Two things. First, to get to what Representative Anderson was talking about. You're talking about the guy who was watching the DVD, and we've dealt with in this committee House Bill 12, which deals with that, and that's in the Senate State Affairs Committee. They've already held a hearing on it. But that will beef up, and by the way, I'd like to talk to you. Maybe you want to have a few words on that bill, too, when that's going through. But that bill increases the penalties for somebody in that case who's watching a DVD something, but there are fines. It makes it felonies, and for felonies you not only have jail time but you also have fines. Here I'm looking at Section 3 of the bill, for example, and you simply say maximum fines, like on line 24. This is just what I caught, sir. Under this title. Now, if let's say you have reckless driver number two who's watching a DVD on that, then he'll be, if he's found guilty or she, will be under Title 11. They won't be under Title 28. Do you want to, and there are some vehicular crimes under Title 11 like vehicular homicide and stuff. Do you want to have in this bill that those fines would also be doubled? They're not technically under 28, they're technically under Title 11. But if those occur in this kind of a designated area, do you want to have that those would be increased too?
I have to defer that question to Department of Law on that. Peter, any thoughts?
Is the question whether to double the fines in Title 11?
Well, I'm talking about for a vehicular crime, then I'm talking if the DVD bill passes, That'll be very substantial. And there's vehicular homicide. Or it conceivably could be assault with a dangerous weapon. I don't think that's very likely. Or negligent homicide, something like that. But if it occurs in this kind of a situation where you have somebody who is driving, let's say, speeding here, and unfortunately kills somebody, they're going to be subject to a lot bigger fine than under Title 28. Do you want to have it so that those would also be doubled or increased?
Representative Greenberg, I think that's primarily a policy call, whether we want to double the fines both for criminal conduct, which is, you know, misdemeanors, $5,000 on up, $50,000 if you get into the felony range. I think that, you know, doubling the fine for felonies, for example, I believe reckless driving, I believe
that's under Title 28.
Reckless driving is Title 28?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
If it got into the, you know, felonies, I think doubling it, there's probably sufficient penalty out there.
I'm not going to pursue that. But I did have another question, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Groomberg.
How you got doubling the fines, how about the points? Do you want to increase the points?
President Groenberg, through the chair, you know, we looked at that and talked with DMV, and there's an issue there, and I'm trying to remember the correct legal jargon, but there's a due process issue that if you cannot lose your license for a single offense on the point basis, but you could conceivably, if you doubled your points under one offense, get up to the 12 point or beyond 12 points, where you'd lose your license. DMV is required, when you get close to that point of losing your license, to notify you and go through a process. So their concern in talking with Dwayne Bannock was that if we doubled points on this, that it would have a due process issue.
I don't want to cause a
recommended
problem.
They strongly recommended against that.
I won't do it. Thank you.
Representative Kira.
Madam Chair, this is what I would like to do, and I don't want to double the points to the point where you might take away their license for one violation, but I think two things. I think an additional 2 points for in one of these zones crossing a no passing zone line. I think 2 points is awfully minimal for that on the Seward Highway. There are things that you get 6 points and 4 points for that are much less serious. So I think an additional 2 points for passing in a no passing zone in one of these areas. And I think passing in a no-passing zone in one of these areas, quadrupling the fine is $600, and I think that's exactly at least what that's worth for, you know, we're addressing places where people are dying, and we know this is what's causing them to die. It's absurd to pass in a no-passing zone in these places. So I'm going to, if there's any hostility, I'll separate those into two separate amendments, but I think I'd like to do one amendment, which is if people are comfortable with it, those two things in one.
Representative Carkill.
I do have a little heartburn with it. I think I want to go, I even struggle with the double fines, and I'll tell you why. Because I think sometimes our signage is as much a problem as the drivers. And so we're inviting more and more people to get on that road. I don't know that our posting has been that good. I don't know that our pull-offs are that good for those who are we've invited to sightsee. So I'm just a little nervous about bringing only one element into the penalty issue. In fact, many of our double fine areas, as it is, I struggle with, because quite often they will post a sign out at a ridiculously low speed a mile out from the action, and it seems to me like they're looking for income rather than safety. And I'm just concerned about that. So if we're going to do the proper signage, if we're going to have proper pull-offs, if we're going to do the things that are necessary, you might get me on doubling the fines. But I'm not saying people should go out and do these bad things, but I'm saying I don't know that we've done all we can to discourage the bad behavior by not having pull-offs for people that are pulling campers or boats that might end up get a long line of traffic. And sometimes they may pull over to the side of the road, and you might have to cross that yellow line to get around them. And I don't want to have to treble a fine on somebody who's just trying to create less of a safety hazard. So I'm a little nervous about the way we're going here. And I've driven down that road a few times. I haven't as much as most of you have probably, but I can understand you have a bad actor, you want to nail him. Don't get me wrong. But at this point, I want to go just the double fine and ease way into it. I think signage is easier. If you have regular fine on this side of the sign, trouble fine for this, and double fine for this, I don't know if you're going to get me on that.
Representative Wilson, on that point?
On page 2 of the bill, on line 5, this says that maybe the sign won't, I mean, there's a possibility that the sign wouldn't be there. A claim for damages may not be made against the state or its officers, employees, or agents for an act of omission relating to the designation and erection of the signs. So, I mean, if you're concerned about people seeing the sign here, they're saying, well, nobody can do anything if the signs aren't there. So, I just want to point that out.
On that point, Madam Chair, two things. And I really good catches here. I think we should have something in here requiring putting up more signs, too. It's a minimal expense, and it will hopefully prevent some of these infractions. Is there a requirement as to how often the signs go up? Because I think there should be a lot of signs on something like this.
Representative Gruenberg and Representative McCall, go through the chair. One of the things that we're doing as part of this thing is amending our what's called the Alaska Traffic Manual. It's the book at which determines, size, appearance of signs, what they say. It will include that at the beginning and the end of one of these zones, it will say begin double traffic fines, highway safety corridor, end double traffic fines. And throughout on every speed limit sign and every other place that we've got an intersecting road coming through there will be notification that it be well signed. And this is not the first committee that has brought that up.
May I follow up on that, please? I would like a requirement in there that in addition to any other signage, there should be a sign up every so often. Would you say every 2-3 miles? This is a 10-mile period. Isn't this a 10-mile deal? No, that's more than 10 miles. Suppose we were to say there shall be a sign with the posted speed limit and double fines every 3 miles?
Kurt Smith, our state highway traffic engineer.
Could we ask Mr. Smith to come up?
Every 5 miles, we have a speed limit sign.
In this modification to the Alaska Traffic Manual, we require that speed limit signs that are marked safety zone be posted every 5 miles within a safety corridor.
I would like to...
Representative Gruenberg?
I would like to suggest, and I think there's a minimal expense, but it's well worth it if we can stop somebody. If we were to say every 3 miles, the speed limit and double signs, would that be agreeable to the department? I will at the appropriate time offer that every 3 miles. And secondly, Madam Chair, I have found a very dangerous practice along Turnagain Arm is vehicles going too slowly. I want something in here. I'd like something in here that would also double the fine for going too slowly and obstructing traffic.
Go ahead and set the bill to the side to allow Representative Gruenberg to work.
This is just take a moment.
Actually,
we have 10 minutes.
Representative Gruen, those things are best addressed through our traffic manual or through regulation and not in statute. Our proposal on this is that the regulations in which we'll deal with will be in our traffic manual. They can be adjusted very quickly. It's not our intent to try and make money on this and fool people. We want to promote highway safety and target the high-risk drivers with this.
If
it's your desire to have a sign every 3 miles, you have my word, we'll have that in the traffic manual, that it'll be every 3 miles.
You don't need to have a letter.
There could be a subcommittee of Cott, Gruenberg, and Conkle on this to assess over the weekend.
I won't go there either. So both of those can be addressed in a... Do you need to have some kind of a letter or a motion from the committee on this?
If you would like to give us direction to do that.
Could I make a motion?
Feel free to write whatever you want. I'm not writing it.
No, okay. I will work with you folks for a committee letter. Can we take that up at the next meeting? A letter of intent or something?
You can make the motion. I'm not interested in it. You're a representative. You've got your own letterhead. You've got your own time. spend your time working with them.
What I was going to suggest is, would the committee be willing to entertain a letter of intent? I'm not holding the bill, to follow the bill.
Would other members be interested in a letter of intent?
Then it means through the chair we have to have another meeting, and I agree with your philosophy, but
we're not going to have any more
meetings. Cumbersome. Well, we'd have to come back and then review it because I'm not going to sign off.
No. I'll bring it up at the next meeting.
Okay, bring it up at the next meeting.
The bill, then.
Further amendments to the bill.
Chair, one amendment.
Representative Guerra.
Are we on amendment number one? Is that where we are?
I don't think we've had. We had amendment number one, Carrie. Yes, amendment number two.
This is going to be
number three, right, Susan?
I don't think this bill's had any amendments. We spoke about one, but
not. Okay. And Madam Chair, may I speak?
Representative Anderson?
Monday, we don't have a meeting because of the Easter holiday.
My apologies.
I assume this has to be expedited to finance, and you want to get it moved into the other body, correct?
It has passed the other body, Representative Anderson.
The other one was the House bill. Okay, then we have time.
Okay, so it's amendment number two.
I was worried it was House bill.
Madam Chair, I move amendment number two, which will be to also provide that for infractions involving passing in a no-passing zone in these areas, an additional 2 points shall be you should get an extra 2-point penalty on your driver's license. That won't result in that problem you were talking about before, where you therefore take away somebody's license for one violation. And then it'll still let you do a double fine zone because I'm not going to increase the fine. So you can still just do a single double fine zone sign. So that's the amendment, is an extra 2 points on your license for passing in a no-passing zone in one of these areas.
Representative Crockett.
A mandate shall assess 2 points?
An additional.
Okay. So it would be 4 points total? And
this question was shall.
Yeah.
Isn't that amendment number one?
So that's amendment number two?
We have amendment number one?
Yes. Is there an objection to amendment number two? Representative Cott? There's no objection. Okay, amendment number two carries. The bells are ringing. Further amendments to Senate Bill 261?
Madam Chair, real
Representative
briefly.
Cott?
John, I want to go back to what Peggy said on that one section on page two, lines five. Claim for damages may not be made against the state. Why is that in there? Since, at least in my reviewing of the statute dealing with highway work zones, we don't have that provision.
Well, through the chair, Representative Cott, it appears that the department is required to erect signs designating traffic safety corridors. So the department's required to put those signs up. And I think the concern was that someone could argue if there's an accident or injury, gee, the accident or injury occurred because you didn't post a sign saying this is a traffic corridor. And if you had only done that, perhaps this accident wouldn't have occurred. And I think the idea was here they're trying to implement additional safety measures here and trying to alert people of it, but did not want to defend a bunch of litigation saying.
Yeah, I understand that part of it. I'm just wondering whether or not highway work zones should also have the same privilege of not being.
You know, actually, Representative Cott, you did ring a bell on that one. When we were drafting this thing, we recognized that in highway work zones, that clause was not in there. And we talked about adding that to the highway work zone clause, but felt that by doing that in this bill, it would complicate things. Remember, Sue was.
I wouldn't think so.
I don't think it complicates things at all. Madam Chair, I'd move this conceptual amendment to include highway work zones as well as the traffic safety corridors.
Traffic safety corridor or highway work zone?
Yeah, I mean, the state shouldn't. I mean, there's no sign there. We shouldn't be held liable.
Okay. Is there an objection to amendment number three? Okay, hearing none, amendment number three carries.
Is that going to require a title change, too? I think it does, and I think that that should be included in the amendment. And we have to do a concurrent resolution then.
So why don't we just do it as a separate amendment number four, title amendment with concurrent resolution. Is there an objection to that?
Just briefly.
Representative Guerra?
I think the title amendment will have to address both Representative Cott's and my amendments. So
yes.
Yep. I withdraw the objection.
Okay, hearing no objection to amendment number four in the concurrent title resolution. Is there any further discussion?
Just briefly, Madam Chair, I'm going to leave this alone, but page two, line seven, you can't tell the legislature they may only
appropriate 50% of something to something else. It's a that's a dedicated fund issue. I'm going to leave it there. But may appropriate 50%, they may appropriate 100%. So you can't limit their power that way. I don't want to spend time on it. It's just it's probably unenforceable. Maybe somebody will deal with it on the floor, but it's that violates the dedicated funds prohibition, I think.
It binds the future legislature.
Or binds the future legislature.
It says may. It's permissive.
Yeah. So long as it says...
You would like the legislature to appropriate.
You might want to put that in there.
I would have caught that.
Yeah. I think it's just an expression of intent. Okay. Further discussion about Senate Bill number 261 as amended? Okay, we've given it a thorough look over. A motion to move it out, Representative Cott?
Move CS for Senate Bill 261 as amended out of committee with individual recommendations in fiscal note.
Hey,
I'm not sure increases or as what we've done here or not.
Positive fiscal note.
Yeah.
Hopefully to go back into improving these really dangerous parts of the road. Okay, so with that motion, is there any objection? Hearing none, Senate Bill 261 is moved, so we're adjourned and we'll meet back again Wednesday after the break. Okay?